The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Today, we talk to MLA Nicholas Simons. Nicholas is BC's Minister for Social Development and Poverty Reduction. We asked him about his personal understanding of poverty, whether his ministry would change income assistance and disability rates, and about his goals for reducing poverty. Here's Nicholas.
Minister Nicholas Simons, what a pleasure to have you on the show today.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you for inviting me. It's fun to be able to talk to you and your listeners.
Nicholas, you've been in MLA for 15 years, and you're new to the position now, and you now hold the portfolio of Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction. You're tasked with lifting almost 1 in 10 British Columbians out of poverty. And I'm curious, what sort of personal understanding of the hardships folks face in poverty do you bring to this role?
Well, yeah, and thank you. Thanks for giving me a chance to just talk a bit about myself. I'm one of six children. My mother was a teacher. My father was a singing professor. He was a professor at university and he taught voice. And so I grew up in the city in Montreal, and I don't think we ever, you know, went without what we needed. We were, I was, you know, privileged in my upbringing in terms of economic stability, housing stability, fully aware of that, and somewhat politically aware of the inequalities that existed in our society. I was expected to be a musician, I think. My father would have liked that. Some of my brothers and sisters are. But I took a different route. I went into criminology. I studied social sciences and got a master's degree in criminology. So at SFU, and that's what brought me out to the West Coast. I went via the North. So I lived in the North and I worked for a First Nations agency there and for the territorial government there, all usually in the social services sector and crime prevention. And after SFU, yeah, I went to the Sunshine Coast to work on my thesis and ended up getting distracted by a job offer at the Ministry of Social Services, as it was known at the time, and I was a financial assistance worker. I became a financial assistance worker and just a temporary position. And I guess that was my first awareness of the system of supports that existed in British Columbia for people who, for some reason or one reason or another, relied on some assistance from government. So I did that for a while, and it broadened the perspective that I had on poverty. Obviously, having studied criminology and having taught criminology, I was aware of the inequalities in society. I used to teach a course for SFU. The Kamloops Nation, Kamloops had a criminology program in Kamloops, the Kamloops Indian Band, as they were known then. And I taught a criminology course there in minorities in the criminal justice system. And that's sort of the area that's I've found very interesting, looking at the intersection of public policy and social conditions. I've been exposed to different circumstances. I was following my brief stint as a financial worker, I became a child protection social worker, and I did that for close to 15 years, 10 of which I did for the Sechelt First Nation. I was responsible for their social development programs. So I was responsible for administration programs for the Sechelt Nation, and that included health, alcohol and drugs, social assistance, child welfare, and justice. So those programs, I became familiar, obviously, with the administration of those programs in those sectors. And I think, you know, working in various communities, including Sechelt, I became even more aware of the challenges that people face in the different living conditions.
Thanks, Nicholas. I think folks are wondering, does Nicholas get it? Does Nicholas get how hard it is to live in poverty, to be living in a tent, to be struggling as a single mother? Does Nicholas get it? Does Nicholas get it?
Yeah, that's a fair question. And I think to be fair, you don't get it until you actually live in that situation. But the best that I can offer and the commitment that I give people is that I make every effort to understand the social, emotional, and physical impact of living in poverty or living with specific challenges that make life difficult. And I think, my understanding of those issues and knowing what I know and what I can't know because of my own situation is helpful for me as a representative. I expect people to tell me the truth about situations, and I offer my experience back. I don't pretend anything. I don't make promises that I can't keep. I do promise one thing, that I work hard, and I will work hard. And I'm so honored to have this position in government. I feel it's a challenging time for people across the globe and here. And to be given this responsibility, to know the talent and commitment of people that I've met in this ministry. Yes, we have challenges, but our job is to meet those challenges, and I intend to do so.
Nicholas, let's talk about Together BC, the province's first poverty reduction plan. When it first came out in 2019, many people were very excited about it, and for good reason. But the prevailing concern I've heard in the community is still the income assistance and disability rates. They're set at $760 a month and $1,183 a month, respectively, for a single individual. And those rates are far below the market basket measure, the threshold set by Statistics Canada to define poverty. Why are those rates set so far under the market basket measure? And are there any plans in your ministry to increase or decrease those rates?
Yeah, I thank you. I advocated long before I was even in politics for more reflective rates of the needs of people, so that rates actually reflected what the needs were in our communities. And I advocated for a poverty reduction strategy. And for 12 years in opposition, my colleagues and I genuinely thought the province would be better off having a plan to address poverty, not just try to do stopgap measures here and there. Have a plan, have targets that, we would be held accountable for, and put those, enshrine those. So I was really pleased. We were like maybe the last province to get a poverty reduction plan, but we finally got one as soon as the province elected the new Democrats. And, one of our first actions was to increase rates. And granted, they hadn't been increased in years. And the increase, I would always want a high, I would like to see higher increases, obviously. The addressing poverty is partly about income. I mean, hugely about income. There are other supports that the province has put in place since they were elected. There was another increase, in fact. The province has adjusted earning exemptions and such. And I know that these are policy decisions that get debated quite a bit. But ultimately, the issue is, how are we going to reduce the depth and the breadth of poverty in the province? And the pandemic has obviously impacted everybody in all ways. So I think we're going to be you know, I want to redouble the focus and on sticking to our poverty reduction goals. Because to me, having worked in the sector, I recognize children growing up in poverty don't have the same chances and opportunities that other young people who have access to other supports and services do. So I really do think that poverty reduction is social development, is strengthening community, is building resilience, is providing opportunity. And the strategy isn't in and of itself going to solve the issues. It'll take concerted efforts in the child care field, in the in other social service sectors as well, to address the various impacts. Housing is huge, you know.
Thanks, Nicholas. That was a broad response, and I think I missed the answer to the specific question about rates, whether there's intention to increase or decrease them.
Oh, yeah, sorry. You know, the budgeting process is taking place now, and the cabinet gets together and makes decisions on the future budget. These are the kind of discussions that are being held right now. So like I said earlier, I don't make promises that I can't unilaterally keep myself. But my goal is to see, obviously, and we've heard the Premier and the Finance Minister talk about the desire to increase the rates. So I can say that. But, you know, that's one of my goals, definitely. So, yes, I don't think that the rates reflect the needs of all our citizens in a province. And I'm really actually pleased that I belong to a caucus that puts this high on the level of importance that it does. So that makes my job easier.
Given that the caucus, as you say, does put this on a high level of importance, and we have heard John Horgan talk about this publicly, that he wants to raise the rates, but still this is a government that has reduced the emergency top up to folks on disability and income assistance. And I know you have told many media outlets that yes, actually it is a net increase of $150 a month given all the other benefits, but still it does not signal well. It does not bode well for folks who are hoping for an increase in overall rates. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I recognize the fact that people have been advocating for a higher increase, an ongoing increase to the rates. And if people were disappointed, you know, I don't want to make people's expectations rise beyond where they should. I think we have to recognize that that addressing issues around poverty, you know, especially during COVID, required that, you know, when the workers' benefit was provided and didn't include people on income assistance and disability assistance, the province made a decision that they would supplement that. And they supplemented it with a $300 a month, what they called a supplementary top up. And that was scheduled to run for 3 months. And as you know, situation evolved and we became you know, into the pandemic, it was extended again for another 3 months. So everybody on income assistance and disability assistance, and in fact seniors who received the senior supplement, all received $300 more on their check. So that actually was extended twice, so for 9 months. And then the province announced they were going to be providing a benefit, not a worker's benefit this time, but a recovery benefit. And that recovery benefit was for everyone. And I have to say that I think that it was a BC recovery benefit, and deservedly British Columbians should be receiving that, I mean, under the income threshold. So now we have a recovery benefit, and there's a $150 supplement So it's not the $300 supplement, it's a $150 supplement. And, you know, people will take what they want from that. I think that, you know, my goal is not to just change rates every 3 months or what have you, but to look at longer term goals and changing the rates or increasing the rates.
Speaking about the long term, Nicholas, I want to ask you about the poverty reduction targets outlined in the plan. Some advocates have pointed out that those targets were set too low. The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, for example, pointed out that before the BC Poverty Reduction Plan had even come into place, we were already more than halfway to meeting our targets. And that reduction came not from BC policies, but from federal policies and from overall strong economic growth. Do you think that those targets were too unambitious?
You know, people have every right to express, like, there are people who think that nobody's going to say that the targets were under zealous. I think, you know, we want to make sure that we set goals that are substantial and achievable. And, you know, I think the goal isn't to do as minimum possible. My goal as a minister and my goal and the goal of those who work in the Ministry of Social Development isn't to do as little as possible. It's to do as much as possible. You know, people say, why don't you have a poverty elimination strategy as opposed to a poverty reduction strategy? Well, obviously that, you know, the goal is to reduce poverty. The goal is to ultimately reduce and continue to reduce poverty. I think we're going to be looking at you know, how COVID has impacted the depth of poverty that's in British Columbia, and we're going to have to look at this again, and maybe we'll, you know, this is poverty reduction. It is not a fixed so-called target. You know, various programs from various levels of government have an impact. You know, employment programs impact some communities more than others. Supports to nonprofits impact certain communities more than others. So, you know, people can take issue with the percentages, and, you know, I have a perfect right to do that. You know, my goal is to exceed the targets that we set. I try to, you know, that's what we will aim for. Circumstances do change, but our goals don't.
Nicholas, let's move to another topic. I know your government has put together a committee to study universal basic income. Some advocacy groups like the BC Reduction Coalition have called for universal basic services, making services like high-speed internet free for all users. How has the pandemic changed your view of the welfare system and the social safety net in BC?
The pandemic has shown us is that, you know, we do have a social safety net that has some rips in it in places and some holes that maybe are a little bit too big in other places. And I think a responsible government like the one that I'm pleased to belong to is interested in assessing where things went well and where things aren't going so well. And we have to not just be aware of the impact of COVID on people living in poverty now, but we have to be able to respond to it as well, because things change. The reality is the situation the people are living in can change month to month. And so we need to be ready to adapt to that. But I think I lost track of your question specifically.
I'm curious about what you think about universal basic income or the idea of universal basic services.
I'm so excited about the discussion that is going to be happening now because of the report that's about
and
to
just
come
to clarify,
up.
Not just your idea, but action steps or plans. Concrete steps are nice.
No. I think it's a fair question, but we've just gone through a in-depth, complex, detailed, thorough review of universal basic income, and is it appropriate for BC now, and can we implement it? And that report has just been put into the hands of government, and it's going to be released soon. That's when this discussion is going to be reignited. And I think questions that people have about, you know, various aspects of universal basic services, universal basic income. I think those, I'm looking forward to that discussion. It will help influence, it'll help inform policy. Is it good? Is it bad? What we want is a policy that reflects government's values, which is that people live in dignity, that we strive to have programs and services that allow people to live as fulfilling life in British Columbia as possible. And that's through all the various programs and policies.
Nicholas, I have two more minutes with you, and I want to ask you about the equity angle of your ministry's programs. We know that poverty is not a monolith. It affects people with different intersectionalities differently, whether the individuals are members of the LGBTQIA2S+ group, or engaging in survival sex work, or single senior women, and the many equity-seeking groups. How does your ministry's programs acknowledge and work with members of different groups?
It's important that we focus on that, and that we constantly remind ourselves of the importance of seeing things through the various perspectives that exist in our society. And the province has some policies around ensuring that perspectives are taken, whether it's the establishment of new regulations or new legislation, that we take a perspective that takes those considerations into the discussion. United Nations Declaration legislation further emphasizes the importance of seeing policy through the perspective of those that it impacts. I think our discussion around our plans for accessibility legislation are informed by citizens who are actively involved in advocacy. And I think that really overall we can see that government policy is evolving. It's reflecting the needs of our communities. I see my role as an important one to further policies that are helpful to our citizens. And I look forward to hearing from people if they have perspectives that'll help me do that job.
Minister Nicholas Symonds, thank you so much for your time today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And that was MLA Nicholas Symonds. Nicholas Symonds is BC's Minister for Social Development and Poverty Reduction. Nicholas talked to us about his understanding of the impacts of poverty, his position on raising the rates, and universal basic income. And that's it for today. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO, your super local morning news show here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. I'm Tan Macy, and as always, please tell us what you think of the show or your ideas and suggestions for guests we should talk to. I'm at macy@coopradio.org. That's meixi@coopradio.org. Ciao. Take care.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.